listening to the voice of Howard Stern.
Hello, you rotten little bloodsucker. This is Alice Cooper.
Hey, this is Justin from NSYNC.
This is Rodney Dangerfield.
Hey, baby. Alicia's the king.
Hi, this is Jack. Just back up from the border for a short visit. You know what I'm talking about, pal?
Hi, I'm Michael
Jordan. Hi there and welcome to another edition of The Horse's Mouth. You're in The Horse's Mouth and my name is John Teague. Whoever you are out there in the wide world, thank you so much for lending me your ears. 2025 and we're off to the races. Fucking hell, what a start it has been. But I tell you what, we are turning it around because my first guest in 2025 is none other than Dan Ross. Now, Dan Ross is one hell of a human being. Like, honestly, after talking to Dan for a couple of hours, I 100% can see now why Dan is a fucking Patagonia ambassador. I mean, he's just such a good soul. Dan, he's a family man. He's a husband and father. As I just mentioned, he's a Patagonia ambassador, and that doesn't come from just fucking cruising around, just being a good surfer. You know, you've got to be more. And after spending some time with Rossi, I quickly realized just what a deep soul he is, how much he cares, and how, you know, he seems to be on this journey of self-development and having a deepening understanding of who he is and the earth that we cruise around on. Now, you know, we all do think about these things, but I just got a real sense that Rossi's a very deep soul, and I really enjoyed chatting to him. So thank you so much for coming over, Rossi. Yeah, I mean, he has come full circle. I don't want to give too much, but he is helping, you know, mentor our kids. He's coaching them through the Saltwater Institute. You know, he's an environmental activist of sorts. He does stuff to look after the environment through story, through the companies that he works with. A very inspirational human being. I got to spend a couple of hours with. Now, I've known Rossi for quite a while, but I didn't really realize the profound depth there is, that's what happens when you sit down in front of someone for 2 hours and have a good chat. We don't do it very often in our modern world. So it was an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for coming over, Rossi. I really appreciate it. Now, what else? Look, I just want to extend and just send my love out to the Appleby family and friends on the Eyre Peninsula. Just an absolute, you know, beautiful soul that was lost earlier this year. And just, it breaks my heart for all his close family and friends. So I just want to send that out to the Appleby family and friends. I also want to send my love to the Green family. Another amazing soul of the surfing community is gone. Alan Green has just done so much for surfing and surfers and people in general. He was a real lover of humans. So just sending my love to the Green family. And while we're on the roll, I just want to bring some awareness now that a former guest of The Horse's Mouth, Simon Buttonshaw, is another amazing, creative, gentle, beautiful soul of our surfing community who is fighting his own battle at the moment. So I'll put a link in the description to the GoFundMe page, but if you could donate to help Simon with his battle with cancer at the moment, you know, he's living remotely and there's a lot of hidden costs with the treatment that he needs to have. And so it'd be a great help if you would help the Buttonshaw family help Simon through this really difficult time. Here we go, 2025, yeah. Anyway, look, I loved having a chat with Rossi. I really, really, really hope you enjoy our chat. Rossi, thank you so much for coming over. And without waffling on anymore, I'll throw you into the conversation. I'll see you on the other side.
Is interesting? Wow. Wait till you hear 2 hours of crap.
A complete and total Barforama.
Hi, this is David Bowie. Pretty things are going to hell.
Chocolate. Basically swapped out. Yeah. The alcohol for chocolate.
So you don't drink much?
No, not really. Yeah. Maybe sort of 3 or 4 times a year I'll have a few beers, but
yeah. Is that always been the way for you?
No, definitely not. That's through learning, through trial and error. Through over the years, through my 20s and all through those times, I drank more than enough alcohol to last a lifetime. So
yeah,
it was through those, you know, times where you wake up and go, how am I still either alive, or how did something didn't go drastically wrong? I don't know. So there's enough of those for me to go, okay, it's time to wrap that up before something did go wrong.
Yeah. And do you find that, like, now that you've been able to put a wedge between it, that you see the other side of life is just so much, like, you're like, fuck, I squandered a lot of time.
Yeah, totally that. But then I just think more so, like, there's no way I could get my head around trying to parent hungover.
Oh, right,
which is every day you wake up as a, you know, in that space. And so that, and then just feeling at your best, whether it's to surf, you know, the waves you want to surf, or to just show up the way you want to show up. It's just, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's epic having, you know, getting together with friends and having that bit of a, like, you know, release where you do have a few beers or whatever else. But yeah, for the most part, I can't handle waking up feeling
a
little bit.
Can you just turn it on and off though? Like, can you have a couple? I can't. One, like, you know, have that saying, once too many, hundreds enough.
Yeah. Oh, it took me quite a while to get to this space. Like, I sort of was either all or nothing. But now I can have, I just make sure I only have 1-2 beers max. It's like, that's it, and I can cut it off. So, yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, you're definitely a better parent for it, and person to yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I just find that for myself, the internal monologue, the conversations that I have with myself are a lot more healthy.
Exactly.
Than, like, beating myself up for the things that I've done or said or slept in and missed.
Yep.
You know, all
missed
the things.
All the good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Chocolate instead of...
just OD on the chucky. I smash quite a bit of chocolate.
Which one in particular?
Just depends. Yeah. There's good ones from...
What's that one that's coloured, looks like Willy Wonka shit, that's new, that everyone's frothing on? Do you know the one? It's like there's a red packet and a green packet and a blue packet.
Oh, Tony's one.
Tony's, yeah. That one.
No, I can't. I don't really have that one. It's sort of, that's...
Too sweet.
Find that a bit too sweet, yeah. Just the more boring ones, like the darker chocolate.
Oh, yeah, okay. Right. Very measured.
Ones are like $20 a block. You got to ration it out.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Now, going back, when you were a young whippersnapper, what were some of the first early memories of the ocean? This is like, I'm going this way because this is such, this is your life, right? And the ocean and all the things that go with. And you being from Angari, and so do you remember a real moment? Is there a pivotal moment where you just went, oh,
I do. God. When you mentioned it just then, there's a few that start popping into mind. But we actually moved from North End, Mulloway, which is down near Woolgoolga, Coffs Harbour area, up to Angari. So my first memories of the ocean are down that way with my dad and my brother, specifically, being able to run down from our house. We had this little track down to this beach where no one used to go at that time. And my mum used to always say, you guys can go as long as you take Jacob, which was our German Shepherd dog, and Jacob would come down and sit on our towel and just make sure nothing would happen to me and my brother. And mum felt confident enough that he was a good enough minder. And so my early memories are of that, and then also just, messing around in and around the rocks in that zone with dad and waiting for either him to catch some abalone or fishing, tailor fishing around those spots, and then surfing obviously as well too. Yeah, just catching little waves in the shore. And another one, getting stuck in a rip when I was pretty young. Dad was out the back doing some laps or doing like a bit of an ocean swim. And he would have told me to, like, you know, stay in a zone, and I just didn't listen at all. Found myself in a pretty strong little rip and just was freaking out, but got myself out of it. So that's an early memory of the ocean. And
So how old do you reckon you were at that?
I would have been pretty young, 6.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you were just like, suddenly you're like, holy fuck, I'm going the wrong way here.
Yeah, wanted to go back to the beach, but couldn't. It was like, yeah, I can't remember the exact details of it, but it was, I definitely was freaking out.
And there must have been a moment of surrender. Or did you just side stroke it?
I think it either pulled me to the side a bit. It wasn't, by no means, it wasn't a very gnarly rip, but I think at that time I thought it was, and so I think it just pulled me over into the shallow a bit, and I could like stand up and walk out of there. And like, Dad got back in, he's like, "What's going on?" I was like, but yeah, some good early memories down in that zone. And then my parents actually split when I was roughly 5 years old, and we ended up moving up to Angarri. And so, early memories from up there are just incredible as well too. In and around that zone at the Blue Pools and Angarri, Spooks. It was just like this little, what would you call it? Just this little like utopia of what it just felt like ours as young kids. I had some good mates that I'd just go and explore with, and whether we were fishing or messing around the rocks, it was incredible. It was an idyllic spot to live and grow up.
Was this in the late 80s,
early 90s? Born in 83, so in the 90s. Yeah.
Special part of the world.
Really special. Yeah. Especially even that period of time.
That's like, right. I think the world was in, like you could say about so many places, right, that like the world has changed so much so quickly that there was a period, and I guess for our parents even more so, I don't ever hear them talking about it so much, but like I know that for, I always think of those 80s, 90s times of just things were still on the edge of a little wild.
Yeah.
Undeveloped nooks and crannies.
A lot more wild,
yeah.
Yeah. A lot more of the zones were wild. So it was just, yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah. And so, and first, like, surfing, you know, was it your dad sort of, who what was he, did you, he push you that direction, or did you just find it yourself?
I mean, Ben, my older brother, he's 7 years older than me, and he and his mates were just always surfing, great surfers, and so I was just idolizing them and wanting to do exactly what they were doing. And so I think it was me kind of more nagging dad around. I want to get a board. And so my first board was a broken in half Malibu that had been reshaped into this tiny little, I'm not sure how big it was, but had this really cool indigenous painting on it. And and I loved it. There's heaps of thickness in it, and being a broken in half Mal. And that's some of my early memories of Dad hanging out in the water with me and pushing me in on that. And
stoked.
I saw some photos just recently. I was going through some older photos and saw some cool shots of just this young grom with the biggest smile on his head and just loving it. Yeah.
And obviously, so like primary school, were you academic? I guess you don't really know that in primary school, but like you kind of get a sense.
Yeah.
Daniel doesn't listen much.
Oh, there's plenty of that. Yeah. Yeah. That's the reports of that.
Always staring out the window.
He's distracted. A lot of that. But also when I found something that I was into, I was pretty good at it as well too. So
PE?
But also math.
Oh, really?
Being really good at that and sort of zoning in. Not like those crazy levels you get with some kids in the class, but it was... in sort of that top tier of maths and understanding it. So I just love the idea of being either right or wrong and not like having someone else determine that, which was good, whether you'd submit Well, not to me, but like you'd do some sort of English project or whatever, and thought you killed it.
Yeah,
it's like, no, this is terrible. So I just love that aspect. But then
I never thought of it like that.
Yeah,
that's a cool way of looking at it.
Yeah,
you're either fucking right or you're wrong.
Yeah,
so much.
And someone could explain that to you and be like, yeah. No, you're wrong because of this, and there's formulas and all that sort of thing. So. And visually, I think just being able to see it down on paper was, I kind of just got it. So
yeah,
yeah. But then as
so times tables, you were handy at those.
I'm shit ass now. but yeah, as the years went on, from primary school through to those older years, I just started missing days because of surfing. And then as soon as you started to miss days within those sort of weeks or months or years, you're sort of catching up and, you'd learn so much in one day that carried over. So I just was like trying to play catch up, and then it ended up, I sort of just started to drop down in the maths classes because of that and because I was focused in on other fun stuff.
Well, outside of surfing?
Yeah, no, just
surfing.
Everything was becoming about surfing in the ocean. And
At some point in here, I'm guessing, this is high school, I guess you're talking about now.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a, like, oh, I want to go pro. Was that did that seed come in?
Yeah, so backtracking a little bit, we used to, so in Ngarri, where we lived for a number of years, I think it was maybe 8 or 9 years, was that bottom stretch. That bottom row where the shop is down in Ngarri, they were like the second house on the end. And when we were there, we used to have some really good friends of ours owned. It was Albert Fox, local shaper there, Albert Fox and his wife and Nav and that owned a little shack down the road. It was called the Shack, just in this one bit of land. And whenever Jake Patterson or Paul or Sam Carey and the crew used to come through. Either just before the events in Australia or at that time, they would stay at the shack and they'd hang out for a couple of months there because it was just the perfect spot when the waves were good. And so I'd always end up riding down there and going to see the guys and like checking out boards and asking for stickers and just frothing out as a young grom and seeing that they did this for a living. It's like, what? You guys surf for a living? And so at an early age, I was exposed to that, and so I just was like, that's what I want to do, and whatever path or whatever way in which I could do that, that was the goal. And so, I mean, I had in my younger years, it was all about the ocean and surf, but then once I started, spending time and hanging out with my brother's mates and older crew that were actually doing it and living it, that's just all I wanted to do.
I just went on a weird tangent in my mind as I was listening to you. Have you seen the movie Breath?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, do you think that was written about your childhood?
That's a really cool movie. I loved watching that.
It's such a good film.
Yeah.
But many things same that you've just said to me about, like, when your dad and your brother went over the dune, no one really went there, and that was like this spot, and that was like, that's like a scene from Breath.
Yeah.
And then, a few things you've said.
Yeah, and just idolising,
Yeah, like this mystique that, above world.
Yeah.
There's so much mystique. For me personally, I came to surfing quite late. Like, I had to fight. My parents weren't really into that. And so I had to fight for everything from 13. I was just like, I'm going to. My old man was like, what? No. You have to play footy. No. just the mystique.
Mm.
There was this culture and community that was so, like, shrouded in secrecy and, shaping and the smells of the shaping bay and the glassing room, all that, just, like, fucking boom.
Yeah, the hardener and all. Yeah, you saying that. I remember, at a really young age being in the bay and smelling the resins and watching Batty, Dave Treloar, mix the hardeners and, like, this whole little science project around just being in there going, whoa, like, yeah. Those things that really stand out in your memory.
Now, your relationship with Batty, you knew him from a really young age.
Yeah, from pretty much 5 or 6 years old.
And were you in, did, at that point, did you, were you like, I know this dude's in like Morning of the Earth? Do you have an aura around him? Or
No, I had no. I'd have probably a rough idea around, you know, him being in Morning of the Earth and all that, but it was more about, he was my best mate when I was young, because he was such a big kid himself. It was like, whether it was surfing or fishing or anything just related to the ocean, and that zone specifically around Angara, it was, it was more just like, yeah, a best mate. Me and my brother would be hanging out with him nonstop, and to the point of where, like, even when I got a bit older, like, he'd be waiting for me once I got home from school. He'd be like, right, surf pumping, we're going. Like, gear would be in the car, packed, straight to the point. And, a really good mate at that young age. Yeah. For years, he would sort of show me footage and different clips that he'd had on those old cassette tapes and whatever else, and showing me stuff. And I kind of was into it a bit when I was younger, but not...
Like surf flicks?
Like the old, you know, really old footage from all, you know, just the rad stuff they'd done over the years. And I was kind of like, oh, yeah, cool. But it wasn't until I got a bit older, I was like, wow, this is fucking awesome. Yeah, really understood and started asking the stories. And he was just a brilliant storyteller, and had the memory of just the most amazing memory. So he could just tell you to the day of the swell, what cyclone it was, the name of the cyclone, like who was... who was catching the bombs that day, who wasn't, and brilliant memory and attention to detail for telling stories. So no, I went a bit off track there. His influence at a young age was just incredible. So me and my brother just constantly say, like, how blessed and how lucky we were to have him as a mentor and guiding us through those years with everything ocean related was just insane.
And his depth of knowledge on all the aspects was,
just from lived experience, like someone that spent their whole life in the ocean fishing or surfing, or just subconsciously studying it, you know. Amazing.
And I love that, like, I don't know who his mentors would have been, or it would have just been a yearning. You know, just because there wouldn't have been, I think you go one generation back and it was all a lot of pioneering sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah, for him growing up in Manly, surfing there and having, friends and people that he idolised, I guess, in that zone, that was what he was doing. But then once, I think he was around maybe 16 or 17, he'd heard about crew doing trips up north to Angara, and I think he, I wish I could remember specifically some of the stories, but when we were talking about, just begging one of the guys, whether it was Bob Evans or one of the crew that was going there, like, just saying, please take me, I want to, you know, I've got to jump in on this next trip. And so, him finally getting up there at that age. And I think once he got there, he just was like, I'm not leaving. Yeah.
So, and super ballsy, because I think back then the surfing was the Wild West. They were like pioneers of sorts, pushing into areas they didn't know much about, marine life, and society was looking down upon such ragamuffins, you know. It wasn't cool like it is now.
Yeah, no, the bums, it was like, or looked at as bums and whatever else, and just, but really they were just...
legends.
Crew that was so connected in to nature and what they were doing. Yeah. That was just, yeah, some of them, yeah.
It's awesome.
It is, yeah.
It's, yeah. Anyway, yeah, we digress, but thanks for indulging me on that rabbit hole.
Oh, we could talk all day on baddie stories and all the incredible things that he shared over the years, just to everyone, really, like, especially that community in Angara and Yamba. There's so many of my good friends and just people within the community that had such a close connection with him, in whatever way that might have been, from him calling him into the best waves they've ever surfed, because he's just there saying, go, and they probably wouldn't have normally gone to maybe the biggest wipeout they've had as well too, but also just yeah, going fishing with him was an experience in itself. Just the way he just again was so connected in, had all these landmarks for his fishing spots written down in a book. I've got the book at home, and so there was. Yeah, there's all these different landmarks. He was lining up with different pine trees in town at Yamba, and then the Clarence Peak, and so it was no sounders or anything that he was using. It was all just like, yep, this is the zone, this is where I've caught him before. And he'd write down patterns of how, you know, this time of year caught this many snapper, da 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 at this time. And so he just developed this, like, you know,
so he's database in his mind, the,
just so in tune with it all.
Synchronicity of everything. Yeah. And the sickleness.
And he'd connect that with, like, oh, that was after this cyclone Betsy or this certain swell was all too. He just had it all in his mind and his memory. It was so clear. So surfing and fishing and the connectedness in and around it, it was just like, it was so amazing just to learn so much of that from him. It's just... So grateful and so blessed that we're...
What sort of boat did you go out in?
He just had a little tinny. It was always just a small enough boat